You're listening to Meeting Pod, the podcast powered by Meeting Place, the premier magazine and news source for the meat and poultry processing industry, and Alt Meat Magazine, the only business information resource for the exploding alternative meat industry.
Hi, I'm Lisa Keefe, editor-in-chief of Meeting Place and Alt Meat. Welcome to this month's Meeting Pod episode dedicated to the meat alternatives industry. Christy LaGalle is the founder and CEO of Seattle-based Rebellious, which is kind of two companies in one. Rebellious Foods makes a variety of plant-based, faux chicken items for retail and food service, including the National School Lunch Program. And Rebellious Tech designs and builds the equipment used to make the plant-based products, specifically to address the technical challenges of working with a plant-based protein formulation. LaGalle sat down with us during the recent Process Expo show in Chicago to provide insights into the present and the future of Rebellious, and also of the meat substitute market as a whole. So, Christy, you are head of Rebellious Foods, which makes plant-based chicken nuggets and other chicken-like products for various markets, but you also have a Seattle-based company that where you make equipment and you are engineering new technologies. Can you tell me about the two companies and the origin story? How did you get into this business?
In terms of our origin story, we actually started as Seattle Food Tech, which is the original name that I gave the company to represent the fact that we existed to essentially solve the manufacturing challenges that were making plant-based meat such high cost, was appearing in such low volumes in the market, and fundamentally wasn't addressing the quality concerns we were seeing when plant-based meat was made at scale. And so Seattle Food Tech was the launch version of our company, and it is still our corporate name. We later added the name Rebellious Foods as a brand name that we could sell products under, both to our food service clients and now later, post-pandemic, to our retail clients. And that's obviously a really beneficial part of having a brand is being able to have something that people can kind of get behind and remember. And so Seattle Food Tech wasn't that memorable name. But right now, when we refer to Rebellious Foods, we usually also refer to Rebellious Tech, which is kind of the other side of our company. So we call it Rebellious Foods and then Rebellious Tech, even though our corporate name is Seattle Food Tech. The idea there is that on one side, we wanted to be a genuine plant-based foods manufacturer. Prior to the pandemic, we were only serving the food service market. We were selling into hospitals, schools, universities, corporate cafeterias, ballparks, stadiums, even starting to work with the military a little bit. Those were all really, really exciting opportunities. And we were even starting to get into school lunches right when the pandemic struck. Those first customers in food service was critical to our business model because the purpose of our making products in the first place was to determine what the major bottlenecks were. And then it was to actually solve those bottlenecks by running an engineering department, a research department that looked at how we make plant-based meat and then how we can make it better and then actually come up with the intellectual property necessary to either design better processes or design better equipment. And that's exactly what we did. And that's what we do at Rebellious Tech versus Rebellious Foods. So we now run both companies. They aren't actually separate companies. They're the same company, Rebellious, but they actually work in tandem in that everything that is learned or developed or built for better manufacturing of plant-based meat is first deployed in Rebellious Foods to make our products faster, better, and less expensive and in higher volume. So essentially, we're de-risking our own technology and also benefiting from our own technology.
Do you consider yourself more of a food manufacturer, a food equipment design firm, or both?
Absolutely both, because I feel like they inform each other extensively. Without the food manufacturing side, we wouldn't know the most difficult problems of manufacturing, whether that be the deep-rooted problems with food safety or the difficulties with labor shortages or things like that, that deeply affect the ultimate availability and cost of plant-based meat. So that information is always continuously daily shared with the rebellious tech side. And then the rebellious tech side, the whole goal is that they're advancing our cause. They're advancing the work of making plant-based meat more available and affordable for everyone. And as a result, they aren't working in a vacuum. They then can test out their ideas on the rebellious foods production floor and fundamentally get answers much more quickly than if it was a separate food company and a separate equipment company.
Well, that sounds like a very virtuous cycle in terms of having both sides of that in one place. As you have been developing both the technology and the food technology, mm-hmm. what have been the biggest surprises, maybe the biggest hurdles?
From a food production perspective, I think that we could have been warned loudly and more vigorously if we had listened to more people early on. About the importance of sanitation when it comes to running a food production facility. We, in the early days, would just pass GMP inspections, we'd pass FDA inspections, we'd pass WSDA inspections. And at the end of the day, it never seemed to be enough. Like, the standard is so much lower than where you actually need to be to run a food production facility. And what we found over time, and essentially just found in the quality and the management and just basically setting our own standards, was that we needed to know a lot more about the depth of and the time it took to do really effective sanitation of equipment. And since we run a bread, batter, fry line, that's the most difficult portion of cleaning our facility. None of those things necessarily show up as regulatory issues, but ultimately, of course, we wanted to do the best job we possibly could. And understanding and learning the degree to which sanitation just takes up so much time was a surprise learning for us in running a food production facility. So you really have to cut down how much production you do just to make time for sanitation, especially in a labor shortage like we have now, where the number one time suck is really sanitation. And you can't skimp on that. You can make less product, but you can't stop on, you can't do less sanitation.
So you have a production run and then you have a sanitation shift. Mm-hmm. How are you trying to address the labor shortage? A lot of food companies are having trouble attracting labor, but there seems to be so much excitement around plant-based meat substitutes and such, I would think that people would be knocking your door down to try to work on the line there. So what are you running into and how are you handling that?
Yeah, so a couple things happened that created this particular labor shortage. We're certainly seeing this labor shortage globally, or even at least nationally in the United States, that is, you know, making people kind of rethink wanting to work outside the home or things like that. Of course, working in a food production facility, you're working close by other people. So if you people are super sensitive to, for whatever reasons, personal reasons or whatever, super sensitive to concerns about the pandemic, that might keep them at home as well. So the things that we are doing to address it is, first of all, we are a fully vaccinated facility. Everyone in the facility and everybody who comes into the facility, including vendors without exception, everybody is fully vaccinated without exception. We literally have had to tell vendors we can't do business with them anymore because they weren't fully vaccinated and they ended up getting vaccinated. Power to them. The second thing we did to address the labor shortage, particularly on the production line, is we had some very high-skill labor on our production floor because they work with a lot of big equipment and breading machines, frying machines, packaging machines. So those are very high-skilled labor. But less skilled labor has been certainly hard to come by. And so what we did is we decided to go out to community and we advertised for what we call the guest helper program. And then we advertised for what we call the guest parent program. And then we created shifts that were anywhere between 2 hours and 4 hours long and allowed people to literally have a 2-hour shift to make $50 that day and just enjoy it with their family and just allow people to work while their kids are, you know, just over at the neighbor's house or something like that. And just have the opportunity to come in, yes, be a part of something they find interesting. But for us, we have something like 15 guest helpers now that work anywhere from 3-hour shifts to 15 hours a week. and they fill in on our production line, and they become very good at it. And we have actually hired, either in a full-time or part-time capacity, a number of them who have just come in, loved the work, and come to join us permanently at Revalia. So it ended up being a really good recruiting tactic. And also, we felt like we were addressing the concerns of parents who might want to just get a flexible job, maybe that they're not super motivated to stay at home. They'd love to come out to the world. And just really enjoyed the flexibility of doing something on their feet and not having to commit a full-time or even a part-time job to it. And they can, you know, just let us know when they have available time.
I have not heard that solution before. I think that sounds absolutely brilliant. We were talking about sanitation. You were describing how wet the process actually is and the dangers that actually poses in the production and from a food safety point of view. Tell me a little bit more about that and why water is so involved and how you handle it and then what the food safety considerations are.
When it comes to water in food production facilities, you're kind of always keeping track of the difference between bound water and unbound water. So bound water is essentially the condition in which water is not available for whatever reason for bacteria to use to grow and feed itself or be mobile or something like that. So for example, in animal meat, water is primarily bound. It's inside of cells and it's not really available for bacteria to grow. Now, bacteria can grow in other places on the surface and things like that. But it's typically a bound water in cells. Now, obviously, those cells get lysed and water can be released, and it's not a perfect condition. When you're making plant-based meat, you start out with unbound water because you literally have just water from the municipal source. And then you work in various steps to either use that water to hydrate texturized protein or use that water to create an emulsion. And once you create, say, an emulsion, that water becomes bound water. But the rest of the water in the product is actually still free water. From the consumer perspective, you know, if you're looking at the difference between plant-based and animal-based, from the consumer, you eat it, you don't know the difference between bound and unbound water. But from a food safety perspective, it's an important thing to remember how long your unbound water stays in either essentially a temperature that would grow bacteria or just in a condition that would, you know, harbor bacteria for some reason. For most facilities, you know, you can, you know, make a batch of plant-based meat in maybe a half an hour. So that's well below the time it would take to grow a whole lot of bacteria. But you would much rather that just be instantaneously gone from free water free water to bound water and then just get it through the process and get it on its way and get it to a kill step as soon as possible to just reduce the risk of bacterial growth. So that's why it ends up being a little bit riskier, actually, than animal-based meat, just from that perspective. Now, luckily, the ingredients for plant-based meat come in, you know, nearly sterile, so there's fewer risks there. But that's fundamentally why wet facilities, especially wet facilities where you're at the end of your cycle, you're in your production cycle, you spray everything down. You don't necessarily dry everything off. You just want everything to dry off as well as possible. You sanitize it, put sanitizer, and hope that reduces the bacterial load, if any. But that's why food production facilities, the wetter they are, the more likely they are to be available for bacteria, to be able to provide water for bacteria to grow.
So one of the considerations in terms of a plant-based food production facility, as we have talked about in the past, is the fact that you're working at ambient temperature. Mm-hmm. And that would seem to facilitate the growth of bacteria and listeria and that sort of thing as well. So the ambient temperature certainly makes it a much more congenial place to work. But there also are these other considerations. So how do you balance that?
That is a huge issue, and it is one of the major reasons why most meat processing facilities and even those that make plant-based meat are actually operated in a chilled environment, is so that even if you can't keep your facility dry, which you can't because you have to wash it all the time, that it helps to keep the temperature down. It also helps to keep the temperature of the product down as you're working it and putting energy into it, and it heats it up because it's malleable and you're trying to mix things together. You know, that's true for animal-based or plant-based meat. There's a benefit there to reducing bacterial load, but also oftentimes it helps with the quality of the work in progress material. So the idea there is that working in a refrigerated facility would seem like a really good solution. But what we found, again, because we we were learning as we were going was that when we were making our plant-based meat products in refrigerated areas of our production facility to keep the temperature down, it really wasn't doing the trick. And what we found was that plant-based meat just had a very low rate of conductivity and heat conductivity. And as a result, ambient temperature actually didn't do that much to keep the temperature of plant-based meat down because it's got very different material properties than animal-based meat. So it didn't end up being that great of a solution anyway. And so we actually took the bowl chopper and the mixers out of the refrigerated environment, put it in the ambient environment, did a test, and the temperature of the dough came out exactly the same. Not just close, exactly the same. And then we continued to just reduce the temperature by reducing the temperature of ingredients being put in. And that was much more effective. You know, we're working on a lot of different ways to address these things like food safety and preferably working in an ambient temperature by creating that new equipment on the rebellious tech side that addresses some of these issues. But that was a really big learning. And it's another reason why having rebellious tech and rebellious foods together was a really good feedback loop for good information.
Sounds like an awful lot of trial and error with about 57 different variables at any given time. I want to go back to sort of maybe the basic research and development process for the product and for the equipment. And what were the stops that you ran into, the surprises? Tell me about your ongoing research and development.
Again, because we have the rebellious food side and the rebellious tech side, we actually do essentially separate research and development. So we call the food side product development, and we call the equipment research and development equipment research and development. We didn't give it a better name than that. So ER&D is what we call it. First of all, we had an outside product designer help us with our initial products. In fact, that was actually the kick-in nugget that we launched for the National School Lunch Program. And then throughout the pandemic, we started to develop products somewhat based on that formula, but that would be more familiar to the mainstream market. So products with a little more seasoning, a little more pepper, something kids don't often enjoy is pepper. So the products that we developed and through the pandemic, through 2020 and to 2021, were really about getting us into like a product that people would really find comforting. We actually launched this new product, the Rebellious Nugget, the Rebellious Tender, and the Rebellious Patty in February of this year. So we actually launched a whole new line with a whole new product than versus what we had when we started the company in 2018. Those products have done even better, and they're much more refined to what we believe is the best formula. And that process is all about refining it for the right market. So our Kickin' Nugget product is still available for the National School Lunch Program, but these other new products, the Nugget, the Tender, and the Patty, are available in retail and food service as well. On the technology side, we run the Equipment Research and Development Lab, or ER&D, and it consists of some amazing dedicated engineers who have a wide variety of skills from anything from process engineering, chemical engineers, modeling engineers, robotic engineers, experts in physics and materials, and of course, mechanical engineers. We have quite a few mechanical engineers. And the goal of this team was to design for ourselves and for the world at some point a system that fundamentally solved the problems we were talking about earlier. So we came up with this system over the course of actually a couple years, and then over the last year and a half, we actually finished design and then building and patenting it. And we call it the Mach 1 production system, and it's a completely continuous, automated, hands-free production system for making plant-based meat dough.
Tell me about your plant. You rent, you said, a 22,000 square foot plant, and so many companies are still in the proving stage, and yet you are clearly in the production stage. Tell me about the plant, how you chose that plant, what you've done with it in order to make it a plant-based food product plant as opposed to whatever else it was in the past.
We rented a facility that is been in operation since 1981 as a wide variety of other food processing businesses. When we started looking at this particular facility, it was still being operated by a company that was doing meat processing in it. They were essentially doing meat slicing, and then they were making sandwiches in a cold room separate from there. And I think that meat processing was kind of a bellwether for the fact that we could say, well, we converted a meat processing plant. So the facility consists of about half of it is warehouse, about half of it is food production space, and whatever the, you know, small percentage is where we have the research and development lab, and then we also have a product development lab. The facility itself, we took it on rather early in our life as a startup because we felt like we needed to dive right in and manufacture our own products. Otherwise, we really wouldn't have a whole lot of credibility to say, oh no, it's being done wrong. We have to do it right. You know, unless somebody wanted to let us in their facility and have us, you know, watch them do it. But even watching a food production facility, which runs so efficiently, is so well managed, you don't always get to see the actual pain points. And we wanted to know those actual pain points so that we could develop the equipment, just like all of the, you know, food safety and cold room issues that we discussed earlier. But at the same time, this was a perfect place for us to essentially create our experiment of a living laboratory to create a operational commercial level plant-based meat production facility that could also be a living laboratory for new production equipment to make plant-based meat faster, better, and cheaper. What we did is we made it fully adaptable. We created a production line that could do a wide variety of products. We put everything on casters and wheels and made it possible for us to constantly reorganize, redirect. We can even change the order of equipment and things like that. So it's one of our best decisions early on was to actually make it a very adaptable facility rather than focusing on high volume. We focused on high adaptability, high learning potential, and high research and development potential for the future. So for example, the products that we make for the National School Lunch Program has a different breading and batter system and a different process than the products that we make for our retail products or our food service products. So we end up having to like switch the breader with the batter mixer or something like that. Sometimes we move equipment around just to, for ease of sanitation, so they can be, you know, spraying one piece of equipment while another one is across the room getting cleaned over there. So we actually remove things around a lot. But what we're really excited about is over the next few months, we're actually going to be deploying our new Mach 1 production system on our production floor. But we're going to keep the old process at the same time.
I'm interested in what you are seeing for Rebellious and Rebellious Tech going into the future, but also perhaps your take on where the industry as a whole is going.
The pandemic, of course, which, you know, in the United States very much, you know, started with a shutter right at March 2020, was a pivotal moment for us. We'd been in our facility for 5 months and was just starting to ramp up production. And we were very excited because March 2020 was the month that we launched our new product for the National School Lunch Program. So at that point, we were selling into schools, hospitals, corporate cafeterias, and stadiums and ballparks, and then just launched our National School Lunch Program, Nugget, and of course, everything shut down. And we lost all of our institutional customers and all of our school customers all at once. And it was really devastating, obviously, for everybody in the pandemic for a wide variety of reasons. But for us, it was one of those unbelievable changes from Monday to Tuesday, where we had a company and sales and customers one day, and they were just pretty much gone, shut down, and we weren't going to hear from them for a long time. At that point, I think, is when we started to really learn about how we could strengthen the rest of our company even more effectively. So as March went on and April, you know, started us all to realize that this pandemic was going to be here for a while, we started to really intensify the build of our manufacturing facility so we would be ready for those products in the future. And then we really intensified our research and development for building the Mach 1 production system, our new dough making system. So with that, what we have really learned is that we can essentially lean on the various different components of our skill set. Some days we really heavily focus on production as our biggest strength. And then some days we send to contract manufacturing. I mean, we actually still do that as well. And then some days we really lean heavy on our, you know, ramping our sales. The sales team is amazing. They do that 24/7, of course. But the various different components of our company allow us to kind of accelerate at different moments and focus our energy on different things and then actually make kind of leapfrog progress. I think for the future, we'll continue to have that kind of leapfrog opportunity where we continue to develop in all areas and then can help each other in various different areas accelerate either the lowering the cost of our products, helping to accelerate higher volumes to support our sales, learning even from our contract manufacturers and the good relationship that we have with them. So the plant-based meat market as a whole, I think, is going to continue to grow. But I think that as we expand the market to more and more consumers, we're going to start to see consumers who become more and more price sensitive to the fact that plant-based meat is still 2 to 5 times the cost of animal-based meat. As an industry, until we address that problem, we're actually not giving consumers the product they want. They might like the product and they might, you know, love the product, but it's not going to be the product they eat every day. It's not going to be the product they eat in place of meat. It's not going to be the product that they, you know, buy huge volumes of to feed the family at, you know, for Sunday afternoon football. It's the product that they have on hand in case somebody is looking for that product. So we are really going to get to, I think, a ceiling that is very, very concerning because the plant-based meat industry does have the potential to be beneficial for people, animals, and the planet. And as a result, if we don't address these problems of volume, cost of manufacturing, and therefore cost to the consumer, it is very likely that we'll see either a slowdown until we actually address the consumer's needs. And that's what we're trying to do at Rebellious. We really, really do want to see consumers get what they're looking for. The demand for plant-based meat is there. Whether consumers will fill that demand, you know, essentially spend money on their wishes, I think highly depends on making products that do actually meet within their cost constraints and especially their repeat purchase cost constraints.
Thanks to Christy LaGalle for spending some time with Alt Meat. You can access this interview with LaGalle and all of our Meeting Pod Alt Meat podcasts on our website at alt-meat.net.
Thanks for spending time with Meeting Pod today. Remember to tune in on Mondays and get the inside track on the people and processes that power the protein supply. Be sure to subscribe to Meeting Pod on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow Meeting Place and Alt Meat magazines on social media, or visit our websites at meetingplace.com and alt-meat.net.